Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Eric Dieter. He spent several decades trying to get himself unstuck from his limiting beliefs. He is the owner of a small business. It's the ultra marathon mindset. I want to talk further, of course, about that and how different businesses keep people from devouring their souls and doing business without burning yourself out. So first thing I want to do is thank you for taking the time to be on my show today. I appreciate it.
Thank you a lot, Philip. I am very happy to be here.
I always ask the first question before we get into some of the other stuff, and we got a lot of cool stuff to talk about, the mind. Where did this come from? Where did you start from in your life? What was the serendipity, the coincidence that pulled you in the direction where you are now? I know it's a lifetime of stuff, but I always like hearing that because there's certain things that happen going, I should go that direction. Where did that start going?
There's a lot of kind of turning points in my life, but I think one of the things that I think brought me to where I'm at now is my wife and I we still have a small business, service-based business that we've run from our home. And as is trying to market, you know, when you're self-employed, you do everything yourself. And so trying to market that, I got into finding out about the role of the subconscious. And it was not something that I wasn't a psych major in school. I mean, I did take psychology, but just intro. So didn't really do much about, and I don't know that college psych really talks about practical applications of what the subconscious does. You know, you kind of know it's there, you know, but it was more of an academic study. I was looking for practical things because I was trying to influence people to hire my wife and me. And so that I delved into learning about some practical things of the subconscious and found out what kind of role the subconscious plays in everything we do. And so that was kind of the turning point for me.
Interesting. So when you found that out, did that guide you into going to your own business, or was it something that led you down that road, or were you working in corporate world for a while?
I was working other jobs. I was working as an employee for a long time, but no, I started my business by just jumping in. I needed a job, and it was kind of a toss up between being a handyman and I was in had become interested in horses. And so I thought about going to farrier school and being basically a blacksmith.
Oh, cool.
But I really had more background in the handyman. So that way, and I knew nothing about it, jumped in. I could have made more money working at McDonald's the first 2 years because I just didn't know how to run a business.
Yeah. So you mentioned here about limiting beliefs and how you're unable to get yourself unstuck. Where did that start coming from? How did you get yourself unstuck? And what was those little, I call them God winks, that just popped in your head going, oh, okay, do this. And you kind of ignore them, but then you're like, I better do this. So what happened to you?
It was about a 20-year process. From the time I started learning about the subconscious, I looked back and to my high school days when I was trying to play tennis on the tennis team. And I held the next to the last position for the entire, you know, until I eventually quit because I realized I wasn't going to make any progress. I could play almost anybody to a tie, but you had to win to move up. And I could play to a tie, but you know, you have to win by 2 points. So we'd tie, and then we would play several points back and forth, and I would end up usually losing. Then 10 years later, a friend of mine, we were friends with somebody. Our weekends were spent just going over and just hanging out with us and, you know, our kids, their kids. My friend had a ping pong table. We played hundreds of games of ping pong. Ping pong, you played at 20 points and you have to win by two. And I could hang with him. I had enough skill to stay there. We would usually, occasionally, you know, they say a blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while. Occasionally I would win, but usually we would play to a tie and I would lose. And then when I started really realizing, you know, these subconscious things, I went, wait a minute. I had the skill, but there was something there that made me lose all the time that I couldn't get that last point. So as I began to read self-help books and study the subconscious, I realized that I had this subconscious belief from my childhood that I was not supposed to compete and be a winner.
Interesting.
And so I had a limited success in my business. We made a good living, but I struggled with that, trying to change my subconscious to convince myself that I was supposed to be able to make more money than I was making, because I'd hit, we hit a ceiling, and two, have more success in the business than what I had. I wanted to take the next step. That was the limiting beliefs that I was dealing with. And then read all the self-help books. So went to mindset, seminars, set goals, set SMART goals, did all of the things. I didn't hire a coach, but that was where I was at, was trying to get over that limiting belief.
So that's how you started figuring out how to get yourself unstuck.
I was on that pursuit, and I continued at it until I was 60 years old. But I read a book.
Yeah.
And it described a process to a different take on the subconscious that I was missing.
Interesting.
And how the mind and the body interact. And that not only was my mind, my thoughts, I was trying to influence my subconscious with my thoughts alone, and the emotions in my body were having none of it, because there's also this.
Yeah. Okay. I got it. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kept telling yourself something, and then your body, that's something that's extremely interesting. In the philosophy I'm doing for myself, it's called Ajna, it's about your soul knowledge, and it's an imaging technique. And I have my first student, and it's interesting to see the way the mind works. This is like, well, you can't do this, whatever that is, it doesn't matter. As then, well, just list the things, tell me why you can't do it. And it's like, 10 pages worth of stuff, exaggerating, of course, but it's long. And then it's like, give me the stuff that you can do with. It's like one or two.
Mm-hmm.
So those limiting beliefs are, did you do anything by putting things on paper? Did you set yourself a goal and objective? What did you start doing? Was that little thing that you did to turn that switch, started turning to be on, and where you're, because I'm sure you're doing it just like we all are. You're always battling back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
When you fight against it, it doesn't work, right? But like you were saying, your body's going, I'm not doing this. So what was that little thing? Because, you're an ultra marathoner. How did that shape you in the way you're thinking now? And how do you do that? How you did that when you got enlightened, where you could kind of switch over as quick as you possibly can with the ultra marathon?
The ultra marathon came out of my transformation. And so it was 2017. At the beginning of 2017, I set a goal, and it says, by the end of this year, I will weigh under 200 pounds. And I had set that goal in a different way for the last 15 plus years, maybe longer.
Mm.
But I had always said that I would lose the weight, or that, my goal weight was to, that was, it was, I was setting a goal, and it was a hope. And so the one thing that changed was I said, I will weigh this much. And before, it was always sometime during the year. It was like, I didn't have a firm end. I was like, during this year, I want to, get down to 200 pounds. And so I said, I will weigh 200 pounds on December 31st. And so I was down to like 195 in the middle of July.
Oh my God.
But I looked and I said, I have not done what I said, because, I have this nice cushion because Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Right, the holidays. Right, exactly.
So I need to be about here.
Okay.
But I did not allow myself to celebrate and say I have reached my goal, because my goal was for December 3rd.
Right.
So that was one thing. Then I found a book by a guy named Joe Dispenza, and he describes in very good detail about how the interaction between your mind or your soul and your body operates, and found that what I was missing was the fact that I was trying to think my way into changing, and that the thoughts that I was thinking, my subconscious was actually controlling the parts of my body and my chemical reactions inside my body. to sabotage the things that I, you know, my conscious mind was trying to create. And so it was, he had a very simple meditation practice that, that could help to regulate those chemical signals in your body and deal with the emotional component of the transformation I wanted. The book was called How to Break the Habit of Being Yourself.
I was going to ask you. Okay.
Yes. All right.
Okay.
How to Break the Habit of Being Yourself. And so those habits, the neural pathways in your mind, in your brain are connected to neurochemical responses in your body. And so when you try to change those neural pathways, the chemical responses in your body change, and it feels to your subconscious like it's a threat, because any change in your pattern, your subconscious takes as a threat. And so your subconscious is actually fighting you to make those neural pathways to change the way you think. And so, so the meditation allows the subconscious to accept those new pathways in a way that, that help. So, so getting back to this is a long way to get to
ultra marathon
running.
Go ahead.
A friend of mine, had been trying to run a 50-mile trail race, and he'd failed twice, and it was more of an acquaintance, but I'd seen his posts on Facebook. And so in September, I saw that he had completed this 50-mile race, and I looked at his pictures, and I went, he looks like, you know, there was a sense of accomplishment on his face.
Right.
And I went, ooh, I like that. And I said, that looks like fun.
I'm sorry, I got a quick question. Were you ever a runner?
I was a runner back in my late 20s, early 30s. I had even accomplished a marathon, and then I quit.
Okay.
And so I quit, gained weight, got out of shape, you know, just didn't.
Just stop.
I tried, you know, yes, I'd stopped.
Okay.
I was cycling at the time, okay. So I had
so
a little
bit. So you're always
of,
exercising, doing something.
I was, not really.
Oh.
Not really. I would. Yeah, probably 20 years ago, I would say, oh, yeah, I'm in shape. I work out. But no, I really was not.
Okay. 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 So cool. So you saw this gentleman. I'm sorry.
So I saw him and saw his pictures. And I said, that looks like fun. I bet I could run again because I'd lost this weight. You know, that was always the thing. I mean, being heavy and running is harder on your joints. I says, I bet I could run again. So I told my wife, I'm going to start running trails, because she was the one who had shown me the pictures of our, you know, we both knew the guy. And I said, I'm going to go out and start running trails. And she goes, oh, okay. And so I'd done things like this in the past, you know, said, I'm going to start, you know, started on a health kick. I'm going to go out and get healthy. I'm going to do this or that. And so she didn't have any clue what I was doing, because when I had said, that looks like fun, I bet I could do that, something inside of me said, I'm doing that 50 miles next year.
Hey.
And so I told no one. That was the other thing about this, you know, that kind of a goal. I didn't tell my wife what I was doing. I didn't tell anybody what I was doing. I just said, I'm going to go out and start running. I'm going to start running trails. And I kept this goal to myself until a month or so before. And then I ran a 50K, which is 30 miles in the summer. And she kind of thought, oh, that's his thing. You know, he got it out of his system. And about 2 weeks after I'd finished my 50K, I said, you know, I'm doing this 50 miles in a couple, you know, in about 6 weeks. And she goes, okay.
You say so.
And so she thought I was done then, but after I did the 50 miles, I'd become, you know, part of the running community. And so I finished the 50 miles at about 11 o'clock at night. So, went to sleep in the campground, got up the next day. A friend of mine was a different friend, he was running the 100-mile option. So it was the same course. It was 25-mile loops, and I ran two. He was on his fourth loop when I woke up at 10 o'clock and saw him. And again, I looked at his face and I went, whatever he's experiencing, I didn't get to that point.
Okay, got it.
And so I told my running friends, you know, afterwards, I said to my running friends a couple of weeks later, says, I'm doing the 100 miles next year. And they went, well, why wouldn't you? So the community of people that you have around you influences very much what you believe you can accomplish.
So, you attract what you think about. Absolutely.
I had become a part of this group of people who believes that running 100 miles is why wouldn't anybody be able to do that?
Right.
And not all of them did. I mean, a lot of them choose, there's several that say, I'd never want to run that far.
Right.
And, but but we're all runners. We all go out and hit the trails and we run our own race. So yeah. And when my wife kind of accepted like, oh, he's not done with this yet. And so the night before my first 100-mile attempt, she said to me, why are you doing this?
And
I didn't have an answer. I didn't have an answer. I didn't have it because she really thought I was going to die. She thought I might, be out there and just because at this point
over.
I was, at this point I was 61, I think maybe. And I don't know.
Interesting.
And so thought a minute. And so I told her, I don't know. And so it took me a few minutes. About 5 minutes later, I came back to her and I says, I need to know if I have what it takes to go that far to do that. Do I have what it takes to take on that challenge and go that distance? And so that it was kind of a wake up call for me that I'd done all this and I didn't have really any clue why, but it's just, I knew there was something inside of me. There was something pushing me, eating me that like, I need to see. Cause this, and it was part of it also my mindset, transformation that I'd still been working on my mindset and those limiting beliefs. And I'm looking at, I did 50. And didn't feel like I'd found my limit. So what is my limit? So that's kind of my running story of how the mindset piece came into my ultramarathon. And so the meditation technique that I use to change my life, I do the same thing when I'm out running. I'm very much in tune with my body. I'm very much focused on the position of my body, the energy level, the having a sense of what's around me and my place there. Several times I've gotten into what they call flow, where time and space just kind of center in on just that. There's not a sense of time as you're running. Just
so you're doing
motion,
your meditation live and in person like that. You're doing it while you're running.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Eyes open and just so as a focusing of my mind on my body and the getting the feedback from all of that. So
now
that.
Just to make sure I understand it, I'm sure I know the answer, but I want everybody to listen and hear it. Obviously there's negative thoughts still coming at you saying you can't do this. Are there still limit or maybe I should ask this question. Are the limiting beliefs or the noise that I call it real far in the background? Cause do you still have them or is it actually wiped them out for you?
It doesn't wipe them out.
It never gets rid of it, right?
It doesn't wipe them out, but if I can focus on the moment, focus on my body and where I'm going, and you have to make sure you don't get lost on the trail. And
just true.
There's a lot.
How did I get here?
Things like that. But there are things that can come and disrupt your flow. I didn't make my first attempt at 100 miles. I didn't make it. We had torrential rains in the middle of the night. The trails, that wasn't a problem. But 3 hours later, the trails were like grease and I couldn't move fast enough and I missed the cutoff. And so ran 84 miles and missed the cutoff by 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
So my running friends, our enabler, we call them enablers. 2 weeks later, she said, there's this other race that's 6 weeks from now. You're ready. Let's just go down and do the 100 miles, in 6 weeks. And so, went to that race and it was different. It was on road. It was on gravel roads and I had trained on trails. So it was a little bit different. It was a little harder on my body. And the people in the community, some of them didn't like the fact that there were, people out there running on their roads. And a woman had a road rage incident with a runner in front of me. If he hadn't have jumped into the ditch, she would have run over him with the car. And so there was this kind of underlying tension. And it was at that time when that incident happened, that kind of knocked me off. And then it was hot and I was not, it wasn't my favorite place to run. There were a lot of things that, and I realized that my mind was in this downward spiral. I need kind of stop myself, got to pull myself together, brought myself back and was able to keep going and able to deal with those kinds of challenges where I was kind of out of my comfort zone. I mean,
right.
That was mentally. Yeah. The
right.
Comfort, so that
so how does this, so we were talking about this and you mentioned this too in your bio here. And I definitely agree. The conversation you have with yourself
is so important because that's what conscious communication is. It's about your mind, your conscious, your subconscious. And how has that conversation in your mind transformed your life, not just your business? Well, we'll talk about that too, but your business, personal, how has it affected everything? Has it touched a little of everything in your life, family, friends, everything? And how what transformed for you in a positive way?
What I realized is that a lot of the conversation that I have with myself in the past came from my subconscious. And those subconscious beliefs that I had been brought up with that, you know, that if you're going to be spiritual, you can't have a lot of money. And if you're going to be a good Christian, you can't be a winner. You can't be competitive. You can't strive for something more than what God might have for you. And so that was my story. You know, that was what I learned from observing my parents my interpretation of the things that I heard growing up in various churches. And so the fact that I just accepted it. Now,
right.
That story is still there. It is still, every once in a while, I will see because the subconscious is so creative, it can come up with new ways to convince you.
Oh, you
this
can't
story,
do that.
This story is a different story.
Right, right.
But it still is going to keep you from doing what you want. It's not beat, but I can't say that it's totally defeated. But the story that I tell myself about myself, that is what I think mindset is. When I say your mindset is the story that you tell yourself about yourself. And so that story is counter to the one that I lived for most of my life. And so, yes, that touches every area of my life.
Well, that biography, I mean, you're talking about a biography. You're just telling yourself what you're telling yourself about yourself. That sounds a little crazy, but
yeah.
It is. And it's an everyday. Now, my next question to you is, it sounds simple, but is it always easy to do? It takes work, right? I mean, it takes work.
Well, running 100 miles is simple.
But it's not easy. I can't run 100 miles. I could swim. I could do Pilates.
No.
I do a lot of stuff. 100 miles.
Running 100 miles, you start and you don't stop.
This is true.
Yeah. And well, you have to stop. You stop and sit down. You stop and eat. You stop and go to the bathroom. There's a lot of. But the thing is, when you sit down, there is never a question of, am I going to get up and start? You know, am I going to get up and continue on this. And so every time I would take a break, take a rest, you know, do whatever, there was never a question in my mind that, okay, do whatever I need to do, and then I'm back out on the trail again.
Okay. All right. So when you consciously communicate to people, are you in this, not the same mindset, or maybe you are, how do you consciously communicate to people within your philosophy and what you believe? We talked about this for a couple minutes before the interview started. I believe, and I mean, whether you call it God or whether you call it Taoism or whether you call it Jesus, I think it's really important, at least from my point of view, is to believe in something bigger than yourself, other than just yourself existing. But how do you manage to use that in your everyday life? How can you, you know, because you're I love the idea that marathon thing with your body and what you're thinking and how you can change the way you think how your body reacts. Because if you're going to say it's going to break down, your body's going to break down and vice versa. So how do you carry that out into the real world, especially in business?
In business, the business that my wife and I have, our communication was always, how can we serve you? That we always communicated that we were there to work for the best interest of our client and to give them value for their money and to have the job go like they expect. You know, so we were working in people's homes. As a coach, you know, my communication is, you know, is very similar. You know, how can I serve you? What about this time of speaking with you, interacting with you, will what we say, our interaction, will it leave you better off for having spent this time with me? And that's almost subconscious for me anymore. Because I mean, because if that's a conscious thing, it becomes across as manipulative. Okay. So that it's a conscious decision that I made of, goes back to, do you live from your identity, or do you try to find your identity from something outside of you? Ooh. And so my goal is to live from my identity. And so, you know, what defines me is not what I have or what I do. My identity is defined by who I choose to be. And I choose to be someone who lifts others up. And that is a value to me of to lift others up, whether no matter what they believe. And also, you know, consciously, there is an energy connection. And so I really, we have a body, but our soul is energy. And I read somewhere that the heart, the neural network in your heart actually has an energy field that extends out like 6 feet from your body.
Man.
It actually produces more of an energy than your neural network in your brain.
Well, I mean, you think about, you know, your heart, you know, sperm and the egg comes together, you come out. How does that even happen? You can't, how do you get a nose? Well, mine's a giant nose, but how do you get a nose, or how do you get your hair, or how do you get this or that? But the heart is the most amazing thing, because, you know, and you understand this, and it's, you know, whatever you think affects your body. So if you're in a negative state of mind, and real simply put, your body's going to be in a negative state of mind. You could have digestive issues. You could have heart problems. You could have eyesight problems. You could have sleep problems, which I think is a big deal. Have you found within your philosophy and the way you believe, has it affected your sleeping better?
I don't know. Yes, probably better.
Okay.
I wake up usually several times a night, but I go directly back to sleep. I mean, when I wake up, it's like turning on a switch. And so I'll wake up, I'm fully functioning, go to the bathroom, lay back down, and within a minute, I'm asleep.
Yeah. All right.
So before I used to struggle, I never struggled going to sleep, but I would wake up in the middle of the night and couldn't go back to sleep. So.
Well, because your mind's thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, and again, it's training. You have to teach yourself this. These are things that are simple to describe, but not easy to do, because, you know, like the thing when you're on the road and something kind of snapped you out of it, these things happen. Life happens. Outside world is not necessarily a positive place all the time, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what they're talking about. You know, restaurant or something breaks in the house or something this and that. And I think it's important to be able to have that right mindset to be able to continue that and use that, not just in the ultra marathon mindset, but everything you do in your life and how it reflects it. So we're doing a Zoom call. I know it's only audio, but behind him, he's got all his medals and stuff. And it says no limits. Is there something, you have some kids, correct?
Yes.
Are you grandpa?
I am grandpa.
Is there anything that you would want at this stage of your life that you might be able to pass on? I don't know if they're a little older or not, but that you might be able to pass on that could make a difference that you might not ever see, that you could tell them from the way you believe in your life, and not that they're not going to go down their own path, but maybe one less bump in the road that you might be able to do, or even something that the audience can do. Well, whatever you're doing with your grandkids is the same thing you would tell anybody, but is it something you could share with them? Your grandkids, or even your kids or friends, that could just kind of like smooth over that bump a little bit.
You are in charge of your own story.
That's it.
Would be what I, yeah.
You just summed up the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you've heard of like Les Brown and Bob Proctor and, you know, Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill, and go on and on forever. And a lot of it is not being reactive to what's going out in front of you. Because if you do something to me and I react to you, you're now in charge of me. And there's so many things we do in our lives, whether we learn it from as a kid, or we learn it in business, or we learn it with friends, you know, trying to figure out where this stuff comes from doesn't necessarily, the story doesn't really matter because you're still stuck with it. But I love it. Say that one more time.
Okay. And I'm going to add one more thing to it. So
please do.
You are in charge of your own story. So tell a story that makes your heart sing.
I like it. I want a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Say it again. I like it.
You are in charge of your own story. So tell your story that makes your heart sing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Because we often, yeah, I have lived most of my life in my thoughts, the value, and we're educated. We're educated in logic and, you know, I'm a Star Trek fan. So, you know, Spock, you know, the Vulcans who are.
I got a Star Trek, ladies and gentlemen, in my studio over here in a Star Trek shirt. So, yes, I understand. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mr. Spock.
But And that's valued. I mean, that, you know, that's in the marketplace, in education, that's valued. But that's only 1/3 of your soul. And so the heart, the emotions, the passion, is so important. And so if you live your life with just, that is a very empty life. If the story you tell is only based on intellect and logic.
Yeah. Well, isn't that what he said? What was it? Which one was it? I think it was the last Star Trek with the original cast saying logic, logic, logic. That's just the beginning of wisdom. Is this sad that I know these things?
But no, it's not. In fact, you're better than me. I don't remember that scene. But
this is a lot of useless information up here. But it is important to be able to remember where you're coming from and how to think, because it's affected my life and my philosophy. I've asked my wife, I asked my family, and I didn't do it for them. I did it for me, because if I become a better me, I become a better me for everyone. Mm-hmm. And when something takes me off that path, whatever it is, I will leave the room and I just say to myself, either out loud or to myself, going, I don't like this me. And I think it's important. There's many reasons why I wanted to talk with you, but one of the reasons is about the marathon mindset and how you can do this while you're doing it. And I think that's really important. So I have no problem with meditation. I meditate and pray all the time, all day long. Everywhere, it doesn't matter. But when something happens to you in real time, you can't sit back and go into a fetal position and start meditating if something's coming at you, whatever it is. And to be able to have that technique that you have to do it while it's happening really takes you out of that whatever's going on in front of you and going, okay, what do I have to learn from this? What do I need to do with this? How can I use my technique, whatever that is? Yeah, and for you, it's your ultra-marathon mindset to be able to get you to where you need to go, and it becomes part of you. And you're also absolutely right. The stuff never goes away. The noise never goes away. It always sits there. But if you're aware of it and you work, I mean, it does take work. It does take work, because aren't there things in your life sometimes that just want to drag you back?
Oh, yeah, always. In fact, yeah, I was, this year, I have not run any races. I've volunteered at several. And so I've backed off a little bit on my running, and I look at the things that have been in the last month. And I see this was the same path that happened to, well, not the same path, but it was a similar path, is that I backed off a little bit, didn't set another goal. When I stopped running, I was about 30 years old, when I stopped running, I made my goal and I kind of just slowly tapered to a slow fade, which ended up being a quit for 30 years.
Damn.
And then I started back up. And so I was just having this conversation with myself. Oh, I just locked up.
You're here.
Okay.
You're here.
Okay. I don't see the video. So.
Oh, I see you. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay, great. Sorry. So, well, they'll have to edit that out.
That's okay.
But I was having the conversation with myself as I was running yesterday, thinking and saying, this is not going to happen again. I am going to look at the calendar for next year. I'm going to find a race that will challenge me, several races that will challenge me, and enter and train. I'm also, became a race director for a race. And so, I've got a lot of things for next year around running. So, I'm not going to let this slide into, something that where I don't want to be. So
I understand. I have another question about something. I think silence is extremely important. Like I think sleep is, because I think sleep is God's way of solving problems if you're in a positive mindset. But I think one of the things that has been lost, not just recently, but in decades, and it's not just technology, is we don't appreciate the silence.
We mm-hmm. don't sit down. You're talking about meditating, and you're meditating or praying. And when you're meditating and you're doing it live, it's different. Do you take time out of your day, either in the morning, during the day, or night, that you just, it's silence for you and meditate? Or do you like, because I like having music around me and stuff like that, so it kind of mm-hmm. makes a difference. But how do you do that for yourself?
I have two meditations that I do in the mornings. One is called it's a resonant breathing. I've added breath work to my meditation, which really kind of bumped up my practice. I call it resonant breathing, which is 5.5 second inhale, 5.5 second exhale.
Nice.
Without any pause, just that that helps your heart, what they call the heart rate variability, so that your heart beats like a metronome. It is actually very unhealthy. It needs to make small variations in the electrical, you know, and adaptations, you know, second by second almost.
Okay.
So the heart rate variability, that's for that. So it's, but again, it's as I listen, I've got a music that I use to keep time for that. So I do that for 10 minutes. So it's 78 beats per minute, which runs out to, like, if I do it, it works. So it's 5.5 seconds in and out.
Okay.
Focus on my body, and my meditation practice is focusing on relaxing my body. So it's an awareness of what is happening in my body, and any areas of tension, I focus on relaxing. Then when that's over, then I go into silence, and I call it samurai breath. The samurais had a test. I don't know if it's their final exam, but they had to breathe in and out with a feather underneath their nose, and they couldn't, if the feather moved, they were like out of the program. And so it's a very controlled, slow in and out. And that is, again, a focus on controlling your body, controlling what's happening, and controlling your breath. And so in that, I breathe about 2.5 breaths per minute. So it's a very, very slow breathing. Those are the two techniques that I do. I'll use, traffic is the trigger for me. And so a lot of times when I'm driving, I'll do the samurai breathing just as I'm driving.
Somebody's beeping you going, could you move? It's a green light.
Yeah. No, it's more if we drive on interstate. So as I'm on the interstate, I'll focus on my breath, focus on the awareness of my body, and just to relax. And so I'm still conscious of things that are around me.
Oh, sure.
But it is relaxing my body, which then allows my emotions to be in a neutral place.
Got it.
Which is probably why the samurai did it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, that's true. I've seen the samurai movies. I know all about it.
Yeah. But so my meditation practice is of really an awareness of what's going on in my body. And so that's why I can do it while I'm running. As I'm running, it's, you know, there's places in your running technique, there are areas of your body that need to be relaxed while you're running. I mean, the main muscles should, you know, your back shouldn't be tight while you're running. Your shoulders shouldn't be tight while you're running. Your upper body should be relaxed. There's movement, but there should be relaxation as well, not tension. So there's a difference between moving your muscles when they're tense and moving your muscles when they're relaxed.
Interesting. Wife and I used to do yoga, but we do a little bit, but we do a lot of Pilates now, and we do swimming, and we're not ultra marathon. So I want to talk more about, you know, we talked about the silence and the meditation, and one of the things I wanted to share with you was when we swim, we go to a health club here and we get into the lane, and I used to count the laps. Now, when we first started swimming again, I swear I forgot how to swim. And I just call it swimming, moving my arms or whatever the swimming term is. I just do the regular and I'm breathing. And after it took maybe 6-7 months to get back into that because I just didn't remember. And, you know, going to the pool is different other than swimming. So now what I do is I go into my meditative state. I'm not fancy. I'm slow. I don't do the flips. I was never that kind of swimmer. And I just go back and forth. My wife tells me she counts. That's what she does. But when I'm in there, I start thinking about my day. I start meditating and I'm praying and I'm I'm thanking God for everything. I mean, because one of the things for me is in the morning, I won't get out of bed until I'm in a positive mindset. So I'm there sometimes for a whole week. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah. And it can be difficult at times, but I always go, thank you, God, for the floor that I have. Thank you for the blanket. Thank you for the electricity. Thank you for the clean water. Thank you for that. So when I'm swimming now, and many times, yeah, I don't want to do it, but when I get there, it feels so good. And I'm so, and you were talking about not being tense with your back or your neck or anything. Mm-hmm. And when I learned how to relax, my wife says I'm very splashy. Because I'm just boom, boom, boom. And I'm not kicking the professional way. It doesn't matter to me. Just in the heart, you know, I start thinking, okay, it's interesting that you mentioned about the mindset and what you're thinking about when you're running. So when I first started doing this, well, I had this thing in my mind, well, you know, you're older, you're not going to be able to swim as fast, you're going to get a heart attack, you know, all these stupid things in your mind. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I had to go past that. And it took at least close to a year till I got to the point where I could just swim. Those thoughts, you know, they're a little bit in the background, but my overriding ones were, let's focus on my day. Let's meditate and pray. And there's so many things I get out of it. And when we go to Pilates, it's different. I mean, you're moving into a pretzel and everything, but it's still, you know, you're talking about this while you're running or while you're doing things live. And I was doing it live. One of the things is make sure you don't hurt yourself, including running. Now, do you do yoga and stuff too, or is you just strictly with running?
I do three, well, I don't, I probably don't do it well, but there are three stretches that I do. One of them is pigeon, because basically that focuses on your hips and opening up your hips. And so
that's important.
That's kind of my thing to keep myself running.
Yes. Yeah. Because if it's tight. The one thing I learned in Pilates, everything's about the center. They call it the core, but you know, your abs, your hips, and it affects everything going from the top of your body to your bottom of your body. And so it's just a matter of fact of keeping loose, who's the golfer I was just reading about? He's 86, Gary Player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a goofball, but he's like always moving. He said, the most important thing is be positive and keep moving. Be positive and keep moving. And I couldn't do what you're doing, but it's just the idea you're moving. And I think that's the big thing.
That is the biggest thing. So I'm curious, when you, when you're going through your things that you're thankful for, is it an intellectual exercise, or do you attach an emotion of gratitude to it as well?
An emotion. Okay. It's a great question. I don't want to go through the meditation and prayers anytime where I'm doing it just rote. It doesn't mean anything, you know? And, you know, I real stay in bed until it's gotten better. At first it was very hard, because good point is I wasn't attaching an emotion to it. There was nothing to it. I was just saying it and it didn't mean anything. And just like when we're talking, it's a genuine exchange of information. We're talking consciously about how we believe in things and how it's changed our lives and transformed it. But it has to do with that emotion. And that intensity, do you believe? What do you see in your imagination? What do you see for yourself? Are you got to close your eyes, or do you open your eyes? And no, it's definitely an emotional attachment. Is it for you also?
Yeah. Well, it is now.
Okay. Yeah.
I tried the gratitude journal, you know, and I could tick off things I'm thankful for, and I didn't feel it. I mean, I knew I was thankful. I mean,
right.
Of course, you know, I'm thankful for electricity. I would hate to live with
right, like in the 1800s.
Yeah. And I could go through a whole list of things that I'm thankful for and not feel a thing, because it makes sense. And the thing that I found and the sticking point for me in my self-talk is I realized that my subconscious does not speak logic. It does not understand logic at all. My subconscious deals in emotion and images.
Yes.
And once I put emotion and images to my thoughts, I made progress.
Yes. Yes. Oh, you hit it right on the head. We're human beings that work on images. We don't, you know, video games, TV, movies, everything. And using your imagination can be a very difficult or hard trek to go down, because we're told when, you know, after the age of 4 or 5 to stop using it, pay attention, listen to this, do what I'm told. And then we stop using the imagination. And at some point we're like, well, how do you do that? It takes practice, but you're absolutely right. using that imagination, using the, it's perfect in the subconscious, and just going, all right, you know, close your eyes if you have to imagine something differently, or just looking straight. And that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. You, when you think of something fun, you don't think of the word, you think of the place.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the, you know, when you think about running, you don't think of the word running. You imagine what you were doing, and you replay that movie in the motion picture screen in your mind over and over again. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was supposed to do a presentation on limiting beliefs, and you know, something happened. This is several years ago. Something happened. I just knocked me up. Yeah, knocked me upside down. It was like everything is like felt like didn't have had like I was back at the beginning, yeah. And you know, my confidence was gone. It's just like, you know, you're just a poser. You don't, you know, you haven't made any progress in this at all. Look what I did to you. I brought you clear back to doubting everything. And it was like the presentation I was going to give was several weeks away. And I says, I've got to fix this.
Right.
And so I came up with a phrase, you know, because it was all, for me, it's all about winning. So my phrase was, I am an ass-kicking, name-taking winner. Because my subconscious was trying to tell me that I'm a loser.
I understand.
But I could have said that over and over and over until I was blue in the face. And I've done that. I did that with affirmations. I did affirmations for 15 years, you know, positive self-affirmations. Did not, well, it made a little bit of difference, but you know, for the amount of time I invested in it, no, didn't.
No,
it was basically nothing.
Interesting.
So, okay. You know, I can't just do the words. So I said, you know, I put post-it notes. I knew I needed to repeat this over and over. So I put post-it notes on every light switch. And my grandkids were living with us at the time. So I mean, I couldn't do the ass kicking, you know.
Right.
So I said, I know what the phrase is. I put,
right.
I am.
Right.
I am. And so I had these I am stickers all over the house in, you know, the place that I would run. And every time I would run across a sticker, I would say this to myself, I am an ass kicking, name taking winner. And I would generate a feeling of gratitude because that's what I am. I'm an ass-kicking, name-taking winner. I feel great about this. And then also generate a picture of, you know, that I associated with winning.
Right.
And so I was, it was the repetition, because your subconscious needs repetition.
Absolutely.
And it was the emotion in the pictures. And so I included this in my presentation, told the story. And I handed out packets of post-it notes to everybody in the presentation saying, here's how you do this.
Yeah, affirming these things and writing them down, one of the huge things, a part of any philosophy or belief system, don't just think about it. It'll get lost in 9 million other thoughts that are going on in your head. Now, for the gratitude journal, it's interesting you mention that, because I do one every morning. And it slowly turned into not just words, but emotion and feeling. So mm-hmm. I will say, let's say, thank you, God, for my glasses. Somebody had to invent the glasses. And I take my glasses off and I look at them. Thank you for the window. Thank you for this. Thank you for my wife. Thank you for my health. Thank you. Whatever it is, I'll do it to the point where I say, thank you for the clean water. I'll go over to the sink, turn the sink water on, put my hand underneath it, because it's a visual. And I, mm-hmm. it takes me a few minutes to go, like 2 minutes. It takes me 2 seconds to write it down. Because I go through my imagination, because it's not, and I mark down, like, I mark the date, I put a little dash in a little notebook, and I mark down the three or four things on it. And it doesn't matter what it is. And for me, you're absolutely right. I think it's for everybody. It is for everybody. You've got to put an emotion, which then puts an image inside your head, or maybe the image creates the emotion, whatever works best for you. Because if you don't put pencil to paper, I say pencil because I erase a lot, I want to rewrite it. I want to put positive things. I have little cards all over my house. Positive affirmation. I don't have the kick ass thing, but it's my own way of doing it to keep positive and to remind myself, and not take things so seriously. Oh my God. It's like, well, if you're doing a business, or if you're doing a project, or if you're doing it like you were doing a presentation, it doesn't matter. Something going on with the family, you know, just relax. It all works out in the end. You know, it's just like, oh, I made that mistake, or I said that wrong thing. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Eventually, it all works out. Somebody else forgets about it. You're the only one that worries about it more than anybody else. Nobody's going to notice it. If you made a mistake, you said something wrong, you should have said and instead of the only person that knows is you. So it's very interesting you mentioned that. Eric, it's been absolutely phenomenal talking to you. I love it. What is the name of your website?
My website is my name. It is ericdieter.com.
Well, I will spell it Eric, E-R-I-C. Dieter is D-E-E-T-E-R. I checked out his website. We talked a little bit before we got on this call, and we almost talked just as long on the call before we did it than on the interview. But again, it's all about positivity. It's not about negativity. We all have enough negativity in everybody does, but it's a matter of fact of finding the philosophy and how you consciously communicate, not with the, so much the outside. I love that. How you have that conversation within yourself and how you consciously communicate it. Because when you're doing that positively in yourself, you put it out there positively. So I want to thank you again for coming on the call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you a lot, Philip. It's been a pleasure.
And to my conscious community, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.